Is it me?
Yeah. I think so, yeah. Oh shit, I realised my phone's in the other room and it's like unloud. Silent. Oh no, that doesn't do it anymore. Now you have to go physically into settings and turn everything down one by one.
No, put it on do not disturb.
Yeah, no, that's fine, but I'm just saying, look, if I put the volume down, still have to do everything.
You put the media down,
even though before this stupid update it was never that. There we go. And do not disturb. Is this gonna work? Oh, apparently not. What the fuck? Oh, there it is. Okay.
What have you done?
Nothing. It's just a bit slow. That's fine.
Are we good?
Yeah. I could hear that.
What?
Whatever that was. Did you, like, do you have, like, a sound or something when you text? Whatever button do you click?
I was texting.
It just came through, that sound. You know, that old-fashioned...
Not from this one, didn't it?
Oh, it came through.
You're going crazy.
I'm not going crazy.
You're so like determined that you're right and that the update sucks and that my phone's still making noise. It's not making any noise.
My update does suck. It does suck.
You just don't know how to use it.
Probably. 100%. Go on, hurry up.
Hello. What, you up? Oh.
Have you forgotten?
No, I was about to do it. You talked over the top of me.
Like that guy.
Yeah. Hello and welcome back to the Homework Club. My name's Cameron.
And I'm Shanara.
And welcome back to the Homework Club.
I knew you forgot.
How are you?
All right.
How's your half term?
It's been busy.
What have you been doing?
Looking after freaking children. Yeah. You know how that thing, like, I don't want to have kids?
I don't really want to have kids.
I don't. I have zero maternal instincts. Or one. It was fun,
How many
though.
Were you looking after?
Two. 11-year-old and a 4-year-old. Who takes over the bed, the 4-year-old. It was fun. I mean, they're actually just really easy kids to look after. They're not, like, demanding or anything like that. It was just, like, keeping them occupied.
That's it. Well, it's all right because the weather's been pretty good.
It's all right. It was just, like, in London, though, doing anything with kids is, like, really expensive. I wanted to go to Sea Life Centre. That's over £100.
To where?
Sea Life Centre.
Oh, yeah.
Over £100.
Well, you like the Science Museum. And
no,
museum,
I did that. So. We did all of that, you see. So I was like, oh, actually, see that. And then I was like, oh, we'll go to the British Transport Museum. Well, that's £16 for an adult, but it's free for kids.
Okay.
But then it was actually really fun because it's really interactive. And then just played in parks and stuff. But Science Museum was really good. They've been to the Natural History one quite a few times. They didn't want to do that. But yeah, and then one day we just had a really lazy day. We just stayed in. And then she's really fine because she just put her in front of the TV.
Yeah.
And she does all her writing and her drawings and stuff. So she's learned how to write the alphabet. So that's all she does, and her name and stuff. And, you know, he's... basically a teenager, so he's fine by himself.
Yeah.
So that was quite okay.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Are you ready to go back? Are you working next week?
Yeah.
Back to work? Are you excited?
Yeah.
This is like the halfway point of the year.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that.
Yeah. Mm. Which is overwhelming because this first half has been so tiring.
It's been so long. Like, I know it's long for you because, you know, you've been busy, but it's been pretty boring and long for me as well. Yeah. No way. Are you looking forward to it?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
No.
Aww.
People are always like, you know, I get a bit bored at the end of holidays. I'm like, I don't at all. I could do it all the time.
Do you get bored during 6 weeks?
No.
I never got bored.
I stay busy, though. I do lots of stuff.
I think this half term is probably the most boring one. Because, no one's around.
I've literally had stuff on every day.
Hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah, but your girlfriend did the week off, didn't she? So that's
that helps.
Thing.
But even still, I would have... had stuff to do.
Yeah, like what? Wash your hair?
Yeah, wash my hair. Go to the gym.
You've been going to the gym every day, haven't you?
How many days have you gone to the gym this week?
Zero.
Did you take the kids?
Last week, zero.
Put them on the Stairmaster.
Carly hasn't
hour.
Been around, so...
She's been walking.
So she did 68 kilometres.
Now, speaking of boring, that sounds boring.
Yeah, but, you know... She's like a hiker, isn't
her passion
she?
Passion is walking. It's not even like up big mountains. It's just like from here to here.
No, she does like rough terrain, she said.
That means the dirt path next to the footpath.
Yeah, but she's doing the Spanish coast, isn't she? Which is
like 100 million kilometres.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting for her.
It's not going to be interesting for anyone else.
No.
So, should we get into this week's episode? What did we pick this week?
So we picked 500 Days of Summer and The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Why did we pick those?
Because of a trope that was created by Nathan Rabin. Nathan Rabin came up with this idea that there's a stock character called the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, and the function of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl is basically to put the male protagonist, who's a bit, you know, soulful and he's a bit sensitive and emotional, on his right path. And that's the only function. And he came up with this after watching Kirsten Dunst's character in Elizabeth Town. Have you seen Elizabeth Town?
No.
Oh, that is so unbelievably boring.
But I... Sorry. I'm sure it was.
It's so boring. Like,
it's called Elizabeth Town.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
May as well be called Snoresville.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of this idea before, and I thought it was really interesting, and I looked it up and had a sort of bit of a read about it. I think for the most part, it's pretty spot on.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
And they're also, like, I think the fact that they're called, like, the Dream Girl is that they're this character where the guy is just, like...
Besotted.
And he's like, if I have her...
Yeah.
Everything's sorted.
And that's why they have to be quirky.
Yeah.
They can't just be normal and boring like you and I. They have to have something, right? And often these girls, they dress differently. And that's the first way you can spot the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. She probably dresses, like, you know, in clashy patterns, or she listens to quirky music, or she's a little bit impulsive. Basically, she's a bit of a div, right? In real life, if you met a girl like that, you probably wouldn't be friends with her. You'd be like, all right, mate, calm yourself down.
But sometimes it's the way that they've been projected upon by the guy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's the way the guy sees them. And like you just said, they become the saviour for the guy.
And basically the whole movie, it kind of, you know, transcends just being a rom-com. Because a rom-com is two people, you know, end up getting together and they're both happy.
Yeah.
This always comes from when a guy wants to be with a girl and being with her will make him happy.
Yeah.
It's very much focuses on him rather than the both of them.
Yeah. And I think, like, he will always learn something from her.
Yeah.
Like, you know, let go, have some fun, you know, piss in the wind. I don't know, something a bit like...
I was trying to think, as I was watching, I watched 500 Days of Summer this morning. And as I was watching it, I was like, the more you think about it, it seems like they're everywhere. This idea. And now I've got a controversial idea.
Come on.
I think Helena Bonham Carter's character in Fight Club was that as well.
Absolutely. A lot of people say this because at the time she was just seen as this, like, quite dark character. Yeah. But again, she's a projection of him. Like, you know, the way he treats her, etc.
I forget
that character's name always.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But even kind of the fact that she was messed up was the allure for him.
Yeah.
And the fact that she was so troubled and, like, a drug addict and, like, totally bonkers was what made him kind of obsessed with her a little bit. Not that movie was even about her, but that part of the story very much suited, like, fit into that.
You know, one of the things with that film as well, you know, after the reveal happens, when thinking about her character, he treated her so exceptionally badly. Like,
yeah. But she says that because she says that. Yeah. You know, when they get in that big fight and she's like, oh, you love me, you hate me, you want to talk to me, you don't know me. And then you're really like, well, yeah, because he was psychotic.
Yeah, he was mental. What was wrong with him at the end?
Well, he had, like, split personality disorder or something.
I thought it was just hallucinations because of his sleep deprivation.
Because of his what?
Sleep deprivation. You know how he can't sleep and he gets to doctors?
I don't know, but he made a whole person
that
he interacted with.
Yeah.
That's more than just a hallucination.
Yeah. That is.
And then he had to kill him
by,
like, shooting himself. It was a good movie.
Yeah. It's all right. It's all right. So the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, then, also another way that you can recognise her is she doesn't actually have any of her own ambitions or anything. Mm. She's just there to fulfill his ambitions. And this is quite similar to the Magical Negro character and the white savior protagonist, which Nathan Rabin spoke about as well. Magical Negro, obviously, a black person who has a lot of wisdom.
And advice.
Yeah, like random advice, even though probably hadn't experienced it at all. And obviously white savior protagonist, like white savior Barbie, that's quite, like, a new kind of term now. However, two characters that have been given this label were Clementine in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Summer in 500 Days of Summer, who've been called Manic Pixie Dream Girls because of their behaviour, but actually they're not, because they have got their own value systems and they have their own ambitions and etc. And they're also quite aware of the fact that they are not who... They're not basically not there for the guy. So you said earlier that you thought Summer was a total bitch and blah, blah, blah.
Well, should we get into a one of the movies?
Yeah, should we get into...
do you want to get into that one first?
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you want to introduce it?
Yeah. So 500 Days of Summer. I watched this film when it first came out and I loved it. It's such a good film.
I really like him. I think he's a genuinely very really underrated. Talented actor. Yeah.
You know what he said about himself, which I think is funny? He said he was always cute. He was never sexy because he always looked so
young.
He
looks like a boy, yeah.
Exactly. So Joseph Gordon-Levitt, good old JGL. Can never get it right. I always say he's Levitt Gordon, I say,
Gordon Joseph Levitt.
Something. Well, you know who you're talking about. So he and Zooey Deschanel star in 500 Days of Summer, 2009. The budget was $7.5 million. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. $7.5 million. And it made $60.7 million, which was quite good. Now, this film was a independent film. It was done by Fox Searchlight, so that's part of the independent cinema branch. And it did really, really well in festivals. It was released initially at the Sundance Festival, where it kind of scooped up quite a bit. One of the key features about this film as well is the song dance events that people always talk about. Did you?
Oh, that was cool. Yeah, it was really good.
It's nice because I think it's really accurate. Like, you know, when you like with that person and just like, yeah, the world should sing with me and stuff. Yeah.
As a movie in a whole, I really liked it. I think it was really good. I thought he was fantastic. I thought it was done really well. I wish they did more of those bits because they had the bit where he was singing and dancing down the street, which was done really well. They had the bit where he walks out and then the skyline turns into a drawing and then it gets erased. It looked really cool. And they had the bit where it splits about what he expects to happen in the reality. But it kind of felt like they'd plonked those three really well used things where they could have, I think they could have done more.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And have you ever seen, really off topic, Harvey Crumpet?
No.
He was like a really famous cartoonist and he was famous because he was really grumpy. But it had the whole movie was that sort of thing where it interspersed little bits of cartoon and stuff. Mm. I think they could have made those sort of things happen throughout the whole thing. And it might have just made it have that vibe the whole way through.
Yeah, that kind of indie alternative vibe. So Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a character who's a card designer. Greeting card writer. I mean, it's like really unbelievably boring, but he's actually an architect. But he's quite lazy. Is he lazy? Disheartened? No one really knows. Yeah. And then she...
You don't really find the end of it either.
And then she goes to work there. She's quite quirky. She's very different. You know, she lives in the moment. But she actually doesn't. That's how he perceives her. And then they end up going out, don't they? And she's always saying, I don't really want anything serious. They break up and then she goes on and...
He tries to get her back.
It's just one of those typical films and then she ends up marrying someone else and he decides, actually, I'm going to pursue my own career. And I really like that scene when he writes down all the companies on the blackboard and he crosses them off one by one. And he's interviewing, failing. I think that was really cool. And then it ends with him meeting a girl called Autumn, which was ridiculous.
That was quite funny.
It was funny, but it's a ridiculous ending.
I did like the fact, because it was called 500 Days of Summer. Mm. Which was her name. So it's 500 days with her.
Yeah.
I liked the fact that it jumped around.
Yeah.
Like it jumped from halfway through when they'd broken up to the first day he met her. Mm. And then it jumped to when it was really good. And then it went back to before he'd talked to her properly. And then went back to when they were broken up. And I liked that. I thought that was well done.
That's nearly 2 years being with someone. And I think with nearly 2 years of being with someone who you...
But he wasn't with her the whole time.
No, but like who you're obsessed with in a way and like besotted by and you idolise. And then for that person to walk away from you. And then I can see why he would have been really upset and like kind of like victim, like felt like a victim in that sense.
Well,
like,
especially because he decided early on that she was the one. Mm. He loved her. And he's very much like a romantic.
Mm.
And he believes in true love and believes that there's one person for everybody and stuff.
Do you believe that?
No. I think there's lots of people that you could be compatible with.
Yeah.
Have you? There's a song by Tim Minchin called If I Didn't Have You. And it goes, if I didn't have you, someone else would do. And he's like, I don't want to be mean, but like statistically, there's probably someone else that I'm a good match with. Probably someone that I'm better matched with.
Is he that comedy singer?
Yeah.
When he does, Tim, wish you were born a girl. It's from that girl. It's from that, I'm sure it's from that same group. It's that name, it rings a bell. Anyway.
But it was a weird, like, I have to say, I think the way they told the story was really good, but the actual story itself of their relationship was a bit weird because it was like things were fantastic and then it kind of felt like there was a jump and it had gone to shit and they broke up.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like it was sort of day 130, they were like super head over heels for each other and it was like day 140, she was over it and they were done.
But wasn't that because she just didn't want him?
Yeah, but she did, though, because she kept, like, coming back to him and stuff. You know, and she told him she didn't want to be with him, and then he got upset, and then he left, and then she turned up at his house. So she did want to be with him.
I don't think she wanted to be with him. I think she just wanted to be with anyone. I think she was too, like, scared. She was not a nice person, and I think that's
I don't think she was the at all. Thing. So what do you think of Zooey Deschanel's character? Some people, like, really liked her. Some people didn't like her. She kind of split the audience.
I think, initially, I really, really hated her. I couldn't stand her. I thought she was just so annoying. But, because I've seen this film quite a few times, I think I end up hating him more now.
How do you hate him?
Because initially I was like, oh, he's, you know, that romantic hero and, oh, you know, he's just a bit depressed and stuff like that. But I just find him a bit too clingy. Like,
yeah, but he didn't do anything wrong.
No, but I don't think she
did.
You can't
hate him for being a bit clingy.
I can do what I want. It's a free country. Excuse me.
Plus, he's awesome. He's actually a super underrated actor. Do you not think?
I'm just trying to think. Because we had this conversation the other day, didn't we? We were thinking underrated or rated about people, right? So, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's just rated. Because he's all right, but then...
I mean, think he's underrated. I don't think he is thought of as like a really good actor. But I think he is a really good actor.
He is. I've always liked him. What was that TV show he used to be?
Third Rock from the Sun. He was great in that with French Stewart.
He's got that cute look, hasn't he? But, I mean, I think with this kind of character, the Summer, I keep forgetting her name even though she's using
it. It's the name of the title.
Name of the title. I think you've got, it's kind of like Marmite, isn't it? You either like it or you hate it.
Now, do you like her in general?
I don't. Can't necessarily remember anything else she's really been in.
Have you seen New Girl?
I hate that show.
Oh, I thought you would have loved it.
No.
It's like the same as Friends and like it's the same as all those shows. Mm. It's the same show.
I just find all the characters in that.
How much did you watch?
Maybe the first two or three episodes.
See, we found the first season was fine.
Mm.
We found the second and third seasons some of the funniest TV I've ever watched.
Really?
And it's one of those ones where you appreciate it more from having watched the whole thing, so you can't jump ahead, but you also end up appreciating the characters all the way from the start. You know what I mean? Like, I've watched a few shows where you watch the first few seasons, you're like, ugh, and then you get to know them, and they sort of come into their own, and then you can go back and watch it and go, actually, you were super funny back then, now I get it. I'd recommend powering through, because it's on Amazon Prime.
What do you think of her?
Well, before we started watching New Girl, I loved her.
Mm.
Like, I was in love with her. And then she's kind of become a bit of a wet blanket character. I found
what's that?
What do you mean, what's that? She's a wet blanket.
What's a wet blanket?
What's a wet blanket? Yeah. Imagine having a wet blanket on you. Have you never heard that saying?
No.
Oh, I thought that was an English thing. Like, if you're a wet blanket, you're just, like, sort of mopey and miserable and...
Oh, right, okay. Like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a wet blanket.
Your mum's a wet blanket.
No, she's actually very lovely.
Oh, shut it. Go on.
Yeah, so I don't know now. I think, and then I watched this and I was like, you're the same character in everything.
So this is what I was going to say, because I feel like she only plays one character. And even in Yes Man with Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah, she's the same.
Same.
You could take her scenes from Yes Man and put them into 500 Days of Summer and you'd probably not notice the difference.
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah, I think so. Because on rewatching it, I'm like, because initially, I kind of agreed with the fact that she was kind of like a manic pixie dream girl, etc. in this film. And then on rewatch, that's when I started disagreeing with that.
See, I think they tried to subvert the trope of her being a manic pixie dream girl, but then in doing so and trying to make her deeper and make her interesting, but then using that actress, I think they kind of accidentally went full circle and made her like the perfect stereotype of that role. Which is,
I think, yeah, I can see what you're trying to say there, yeah.
Like, what they about tried him? They tried too hard to go the other way, that they went all the way around.
What about him? If there is a trope called the manic pixie dream girl, where the girl is like shallow and all that jazz, what would be the male version?
Well, there is a manic pixie dream boy, is but there? He's not that.
No,
he's
but like,
a sensitive, love sick puppy. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the trope.
Do you think that would be the trope? Yeah.
I think that's exactly, but like, you know, I feel that's a pretty good description of what he was. He was just like desperate for love.
Like, so I think all these characters fit into like Ted Mosby. That's, I always come to Ted, always. Yeah, like he's just like falling in love left, right and center, and
like a love addict. Mm. Like he just wants love. Not sex, just love.
Yeah.
And he's looking for, and then like you can tell because at the end, and he meets Autumn.
Yeah.
I almost was ready for him to be like,
I love you.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been shocked if he was like, I realised I loved her.
I absolutely hated that ending. It just made me so unbelievably angry.
Like, I thought it was quite sweet, actually.
What's your name? Autumn.
I was like, get it?
No.
Do you know what? I actually had this thought. I know this podcast is going to be renamed the Chungking Express podcast.
Okay.
But that movie subverted the genre of Manic Pixie Dream Girl, because they did exactly that, where they had the unattainable, kooky, weird girl.
I hated her.
That was in the apartment, right? But then they flipped it and she was bonkers and like bailed and did her own thing. You know what I mean? Like they did exactly that. The whole first part of that movie was about him obsessing over that girl. No, that was the second part.
Yeah,
sorry.
That was the second part.
But it was about him wanting to be with that girl and he kept going back to the store, and then she like flipped it on him and bailed on him. You know what I mean? Like, I think that was quite a good way to, they played on that idea quite well.
I think those kind of films, what are those films called? You know, when you get two in one, it's cool to know. I always forget.
Double narrative.
I don't know. Those kind of, I think because of the short time frame, you can be a little bit more creative with these kind of characters. God, how much we love that film, don't we?
So much.
So much. I keep thinking about it as well.
Me too. But it didn't have to end well. This one, because this was American
Hollywood,
and it was trying to be indie,
of,
but it was still a Hollywood movie, it still had to sort of have quite a nice ending.
Yeah, that's just...
And like him and Summer sort of resolve things at the end, and then he met this new girl and everyone was happy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, all right.
Kind of. Would you think, though, Summer's marriage would last?
Maybe, probably.
I don't think it would.
She's a bit too flippant. I feel like she's too flaky. She'd be like, I'm over it. She kind of got married on a whim and then she'll get divorced on a whim.
Yeah. Like in Girls. Have you seen Girls?
No.
So one of the characters, she's like 27, 28, she gets married and she goes, I knew I'd get divorced before I got married. And the marriage lasted, I think, like 2 months or something like this when I got divorced. Which is, it's going to be pretty terrible, isn't it? If you're not gonna she's not willing to give it a go.
Yeah. I heard a story today about a couple that got married, had some kids, got divorced, fully divorced, 6 months later they got back together and then got remarried and had some more kids. And they would make jokes and be like, oh, yeah, these are my kids from my first marriage, but it was the same person.
That's really funny. That's my friend. Her parents have done that. They've married and divorced several times.
It's such a waste of money and time and effort.
You think just be separated.
Just don't. Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, don't get married again the second time.
Yeah.
Just be like, let's just be together. It's fine.
Yeah, but obviously they've got issues with the whole thing, haven't they? Yeah, you can tell.
All right. So, what would you give this movie?
I would give this a B. I would give it a B.
I think I'd give it a B as well. I enjoyed it. I probably wouldn't watch it again.
No.
Because it's fine. But I know what happened. And it wasn't so groundbreaking that I'd like need to watch it and figure out all the nuances. I like really like some of the cinematography stuff.
Yeah.
Like the little, like where the whole world turns into a drawing and stuff. I wish there was more of that.
Yeah. The split screen stuff was really good as
well.
dance sequence that we've spoken about, that was good. But yeah, I think you're right. I think like just approaching it now, I think this would have been my sixth or seventh viewing. I think, yeah, it's a bit like, okay, I think I'm done
that's
with that.
That's enough now. Yeah. I've seen it now.
I'm done with this. It's a little bit like Brick, actually.
Yeah.
And that's another...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, film where first viewing I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then third and fourth viewing has been like, oh, it's all right.
Yeah, I'd give it a B as well.
You haven't commented on this.
I thought I'd be subtle and just not mention it.
Just
I assume it's a cold sore or something.
No, it's like, it's a spot, but you know, I'm scared of squeezing spots, right? So I put toothpaste over it because apparently, is that a myth? But it's been stinging. I was trying to, it's got the disgusting, and you know, I rarely get spots, so I don't know what to do with them, but scars so easy, so I'm scarred up here.
You may as well try it, but it doesn't work, it's a myth.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry. Sorry to burst your bubble.
Literally.
Should we move on to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Yes, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Quite a mouthful.
Yeah.
All right. So, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a 2004 American romantic science fiction film written by Charlie Kaufman and directed by Michel Gondry.
Can you speak any faster?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It's about Jim Carrey, who receives... No, he accidentally sees a letter from one of his friends, or his friend shows him a letter that says, the girl... What's the character's name? I don't know. Clementine. Clementine has decided to remove you from her life. She's going through this procedure where they wipe all your memories of a person. It basically says, Clementine is removing Jim Carrey from her mind. Please never mention him to her ever again. And don't tell Jim Carrey. Mm. And they have this sort of argument because everyone's acting weird, and they show him this letter, and he kind of, not flips out, but he gets quite upset. It's his ex-girlfriend.
Mm.
And so he goes and decides to have his...
Because he's pretty broken up. I mean, I think they broke up, was it 3 days? And 3 days later,
something like that.
It's like a really short amount of time that she decides to take that decision.
Because you find out as you go along that she's quite impulsive.
Yeah.
And so you realise that this seemed like quite an impulsive decision.
How would you feel? Like,
devastated.
Yeah, because it's not been like, I don't think like he had enough time to like resolve his feelings for her. And
no, but like I think the whole point of the movie is to show that she hadn't resolved her feelings either, and that she had reacted too quickly. And then as he's getting the procedure done, he's like living through the memories that they're erasing. But then as he's living through the memories, he, like, remembers why he loves her, and then he has to, like, fight to keep the memories, and he, like, hides in his own memories, and he hides her in different parts of his... Really clever.
That
really,
editing
really clever.
Is brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
And the way that they explain what is going on while it's happening without being like, and
exposition,
now he's doing this. Yeah.
The exposition was...
Because there's a whole part where... He keeps jumping from memory to memory, but they're disappearing because the guys are sitting there with a computer deleting the memories. And he realizes that he can hide her in a memory where she doesn't belong.
Yeah.
And he goes back to like his childhood memory.
Which was so creepy.
It was so creepy. And then she was the mum.
The effect there, the forced perception, was brilliant.
It was amazing.
It was absolutely
brilliant.
It was
so
brilliant,
good. Where he looked like the baby.
Yeah. It was creepy though. Yeah. Oh, baby Joel. Stop crying, baby Joel. She was brilliant. I mean, she is brilliant. She's always brilliant. It's Kate, wasn't it?
Because then, it was just...
I really liked it
cool.
When the memories were fading and they were, like, whatever area they were in, it was just crumbling, like the walls and stuff, like, literally crumbling. And when they were in the house and the walls start to go and the stairs start to go and all of this stuff, I just thought the mise en scène was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was actually fantastic.
And
I would expect it just to fade, like, but it was just breaking away,
And so the two guys came around to the house to do the procedure. And they put Jim Carrey to bed and they hook up some stuff to his brain. And they sit there with a laptop and literally go through one by one and delete these memories as they come up. And we find out that one of the guys is trying to date the new girl. Like, he's trying to date Kate Winslet by using her memories of stuff that she liked.
By Elijah Wood.
Played by Elijah Wood. Who did a really good job.
Yeah.
And
he looks incredibly young in this film. How old was he, I think? I don't know. He just looks stupidly young.
But then Mark Ruffalo is the other technician who's dating Kirsten Dunst, but who's also sleeping with the the guy that owns the company, like the scientist guy, but we find out that she's erased him from her memory a bunch of times because he's like got a wife and stuff. It was really cool.
I hated that scene.
Yeah.
Right.
That was horrible.
A passion. No, like you know when they're like all like smoking spliffs and stuff like that. I was just like, right.
Like
me being like the anal person, I was like, how unprofessional is this?
I hope someone gets fired.
I was like,
this.
You know what? Smoking. Yeah, I was just like, smoking weed in someone's house, that stink is going to be there for ages. You're drinking his whiskey. You know, whiskey's expensive. I was really offended, right? And I was like, Shara, you are so freaking anal about stuff that does not matter, right? But I thought it was really, like, I was like, of course something's going to go wrong. Of course it is. They're stoned, they're drunk, they're having sex. Literally.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up.
He wakes up and they all freak out because he shouldn't. And then they're like...
Why does he? Because...
Because he's like conscious of what's going on. Because he like becomes aware. Because the whole point is that you're supposed to... Because he... Like the whole point, they start with deleting you going into the office to say you want to delete them. And so you shouldn't like even know. But because he's like conscious in his own brain... In the memories, because then they talk about they can't find him. They talk about they
good reflexes, man.
They talk about they've lost him. Because when he wakes up and then they put him back under, they say he says I can't find him. In his brain.
Yeah. So no, this is where I got confused, right? Because that's not the first time he's deleted her, right?
I think it was for him.
But it's three times, right? Orange hair, the red hair, and the blue hair.
I think that was just her coming with different hair.
No, the blue hair was like, you know, the first time we see her, but then it's at the end as well, remember? And that's like present time. The orange time is when she changes from red to orange and he starts calling her Tangerine.
But he mentioned Clementine.
Yeah. And then first time he meets her.
But he mentions that she dyed her hair.
Yeah, yeah, from red to orange. That's what I mean. So that's the first time he's met her.
But he knew her that whole time then. Over two coloured hairs.
And then the blue hair is like brand new Clementine, right? So, because I was thinking...
But isn't that her at the end? Because doesn't she crash the car when she has blue hair?
Yeah, and...
He hasn't erased her. They've been together and just had a bad time.
No, because at the end, you know when he listens to the tapes after Kirsten Dunst sends him off, and then she say, and then I'm sure it's twice, because she says, this is it, it's going to keep happening over and over again.
I think they're talking about their like fighting and stuff.
Yeah, and then he says, well, what should we do? And she goes, let's just do it. And I was thinking, well, if he's having such a difficult time going under, right, and then this is where I must have gone wrong, because I was like, if he's done this before, this procedure before, then surely they would have known that he has such a weird reaction to it, right?
Yeah, I didn't think he had. I think that was the first time. I think they were just saying that
this is just
like their relationship. They just kept fighting and going back and forth. I thought that was such a great scene when he's like, look, we don't work. We have this period where we're really happy and then we start fighting and it falls apart. And they're like, what should we do? And they both say, well, let's just do it again.
Yeah.
That was such a like sort of deep rom-com subversion thing. Because it's like, they're not going to be perfect, happy fairy tale. They know it's not going to work. They know they're going to be unhappy eventually. But they're like, well, it's good when it's good, so let's just do it.
What would you do?
Well, you know, I think everybody's probably been there. Where it's like, everybody has that, where you're like, when it's good, it's really good. When it's bad, it's not good at all.
Yeah, but knowing that information, like, I really liked it when you actually heard what they said about each other, the bad stuff. Like, I loved what he said about her. She thinks she's so different from dying her hair. He's so like superficial. I was like, he had it spot on.
Yeah.
And then she said about him, she's never met anyone so boring. And he pisses her off just by breathing and everything. I was just like, yeah, absolutely. I've been there. Like, you know, right? When you've been with someone and you're just like, oh my God, why are you breathing? Yeah. I'm going to kill you right now. Right? And I can just, that hatred, and they hear it. And I'm thinking, if I had that information, I'd just be a bit like, yeah, I'm not going to...
I think... But I think that was the point, is that most people would. And it's crazy that they didn't. But through all of that, they were like, no, let's just do it. Knowing that we're going to end up being unhappy again.
What do you think about their characters? Like, do you think he's that boring? Do you think she's so superficial?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of the thing, is that I think that's what made this movie so interesting, is that there was no redemption.
Mm.
There was no growth. Apart from their view of their own happiness in their relationship. And they were kind of like they were sort of able to look at it objectively. But they didn't change.
Mm.
He didn't get to the end and be like, well, I'll try and be more outgoing. She didn't get to the end and be like, I'll try and settle down or whatever it was.
I like the speech she prepared.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. And I think that's what changed her from that, you know, managed Pixie Dream Girl, because she is her own, like, fucked up person in that sense. And she goes, I don't want to be the thing that saves you.
Yeah.
I've got my own shit going on and I need to focus on myself. I was like, right on, sister. And what do you think was wrong with her, though? Because obviously when she's in bed and stuff, you see the bottle of pills always next to her bed and they're in the cabinet.
Did I have depression just or something?
That, I think it was a little bit more than that. I think it might have been bipolar because she's, like, so impulsive.
Yeah.
And I thought that was hinted at really nicely. It was quite obvious as well, but no one actually ever talks about it. And it's not an excuse. Because often, I think, with like mental health issues in films, it's always romanticised.
It wasn't
in
even a thing here, was it? They didn't even talk about trying to get better or any. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there was no improvement from anyone. In the end, they were both like, well, let's just take each other how we are and deal with it.
So, you know how, like, from the procedure, like, let's say I erase you, everyone around you would get a little letter and stuff like that. So his brother or best mate and wife or whatever, they know everything, right, about this. But they're not technically allowed to tell him, right? Because that's when they broke the rules.
Which seems bizarre, because if you had erased me...
Surely you should know.
Surely I should be the number one person that knows. Because if I rocked up at your house, I was like, hey, Shanara, and you're like, who are you? Get out of my house. Yeah. I'd be like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah. So I thought that was weird. But imagine though, okay, so you know you've got friends that always make up, break up, you know, those kind of couples. And you're just like, oh, wow, this is so fucking boring. Right, here we go again. Right, so imagine, right, they're there trying to supportive. And he's just like, you know, fuck this. I'm going to break all the rules. Here's your freaking letter. Because I've heard this all before. Yeah. And it's so unbelievably boring. I like it when his wife throws her laundry at him. I don't know what he says. I can't remember. But she just dumps the entire laundry on him. I was laughing.
I think it's a cool idea, just as storytelling in general, that you just have the whole world completely normal, modern time, like regular time, and pick one thing that's crazily advanced.
Well, that's Black Mirror, isn't it? Yeah. Like, that's what and I think that's why it's so effective, because it's everything you can relate to.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, like, most science fiction films don't really do as well. And, like, you've got that niche because everything's too futuristic and stuff. Would you do it? If you had the option to erase someone or a memory.
No.
It doesn't have to be a someone. It can be just a memory, no?
No.
No.
I'm a big believer. I know it sounds lame, but I'm a big believer in, like, I am who I am now, for good or bad, because of everything I've been through. And
would you not want to unsee?
I think even relationship and stuff, like, you're only the way you are in your current relationship because of your past relationships. And you...
What, I feel like a piece of shit human being, though. And you're like,
I'm saying that because I'm quite content with who I am as a human being. Maybe if I was rubbish, I'd be like, well... And I had the same train of thought where I was like, well, I think I'm a piece of shit because of X, Y, and Z. I might want to get rid of X, Y, and Z. But I think I...
Neither of them were content, were they? Because that was a thing.
But his was an interesting one, because she did it. She made this snap decision and was like, I don't want to think about him anymore. And he kind of did it because she did it.
Mm.
Very much so. He was like, well, if she's erased me, then I'll erase her. Because I don't want to be thinking of her while she doesn't remember me.
But what he says so is fucked up. You know, when she comes home and he's like, 3 a.m, and then she goes, oh, you think I fucked someone? He goes, no, I know you did. And I was like, mate, that's harsh. Like, you can't come back from something like that, I don't think. In like,
well, because he said that's the only way you get people to like you.
Yeah. I was like, that's really like, okay, I know you're angry, but how do you think, like, she's gonna go to sleep and forget that you said that? Your relationship's done, mate, and that's on you. But even I was like taken aback like that. I was like, that's really, that was rough. Really that stands harsh.
Out as, like, that stands out in the movie.
Yeah, as, like, and I think then if that's what he's saying to her, maybe that's what the relationship is like, where like he's always like saying stuff like this to her and like putting her down, mm. perhaps.
Would you erase someone or something?
Maybe I'd erase things like, or like I'd rather not have like seen like things on Google, like the Rat King. Probably could do with, I mean, it's not benefited me at all, but I get flashbacks about seeing that, oh, so like Vietnam flashbacks, so I'd rather just, yeah, get rid of memories like that. I think, I don't know about people, I don't know, maybe I'd be really self-centered and get rid of like memories where I've been like totally humiliated because of myself. You know, when you've done something really cringy and embarrassing. But again,
I think that would change who you are.
Yeah, and I'd be like,
I think it would change you in a bad way. I think those are the things that make you more resilient or make you...
Oh, no, I'm a totally defensive piece of crap, right? So I'd rather not be like this, so I'd get rid of that.
And that's where there's like an argument at the moment that, like, as us as teachers, a certain amount of, like, name-calling and stuff. Obviously, like, bullying and stuff isn't good. But if someone says, you know, if you trip over in the playground and people laugh, that's not a bullying offence. That's something that everyone's probably been through.
And you should.
Are you tearing up?
No, it's just like.
You know what I mean? Like there's certain things.
Like, it's like as an adult, you're like, you know, you shouldn't laugh at that like person or lady falling down, but you're probably gonna snigger.
But there's certain things in the school, in like as a student, as a kid, that it'll make you more resilient.
Yeah.
And you come away from that experience probably feeling embarrassed, but then you grow, you get a, like, you know, a week away from it, and you're like, well, nobody remembers that now. Who cares? Mm. Yes, it was embarrassing at the time, but I'm okay. I'm still, you know, people still like me.
I think, though, in this...
You have to learn how to self-regulate a bit.
I think, though, in this day and age, with the pressures of social media, et cetera, it's a little bit harder to get that kind of resilience when it's there, when you can't get away from something embarrassing. Like, for example, let's say you do something embarrassing at a party or something like this, right? And then that evidence is now everywhere and you can't get away from it. And it's on WhatsApp and it's on Snapchat and blah, blah, blah. I think it's a little bit different. And I think schools that do, like Rains Park did, bans like mobile phones and stuff, I think there's a benefit behind it.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. I was going to say, did I tell you about time when I fell over and knocked myself out?
It's funny.
It's hilarious. So I was like running for a bus and my shoe came off. Because I was wearing the Shiba Dolly shoes and I literally cartwheeled, right, because I was like running downhill and I just faceplanted and knocked myself out, clean like out. And then I came to and had like a crowd of people like around, is she okay? And all I saw was my bus and I was like, my bus! And this girl came up with my shoes like, I think this is yours. Like, yeah. So embarrassed. Yeah.
That's funny.
It was hilarious though.
So do you think, back to the movie, I know that she had more substance, but she kind of still fits in that niche especially because when he gets to the end, he hasn't changed.
But nor has she.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, is that, yes.
No, the point of that her is to change him.
No, but often that they don't. That's what Nathan, what's her name? Said is that the goal is to change them, but often they end up still the same, and he ends up still the same.
I think with this film though, except for like the story in itself, I think
they said to help their men without pursuing their own happiness, and such characters never grow up. Thus, their men never grow up.
Yeah,
and that's what happened here. They got to the end of the movie and they were in the same spot. He hadn't changed for the better.
With this film though, I think if you look at the story in itself, I think. Obviously, most of it's in that one night when he's asleep and going through the procedure, etc. I don't really see like their characters being anything more than that. Like, what I mean by that is like neither of them have a character arc. I think it's the editing and the non-linear part of the film which actually drives the film.
Yeah.
And the story more so than the actual character
but
story.
But it's still about him and her.
Yeah. But it's the way that...
it's her in relation to him.
Yeah, where the love story is shown and revealed.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that throughout the thing, she is still... like, they you see them fighting and not being happy, but when he goes back into the memories, she is this idyllic, kooky,
until she's
quirky
not.
girl again.
Until she's not. Until, like,
yeah, but then again, yeah. At the end she is. He goes through all that. He knows everything they've done. He knows all the bad, all the good, and he still picks her.
Yeah.
Because she's...
And she still picks him.
She's still the quirky... Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
But I think she still then fits in that mould.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I didn't think so when we started, and now I do.
Oh, okay. I still think she doesn't.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, but you're wrong, so...
Well, there we are then.
But how does she not? What do you, like?
I don't think she does, simply because, like, she's a, like, I feel like with the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, and I'm thinking about characters like Kirsten Dunst in Elizabeth Town, and, you know, Yes Man, Jim Carrey's Yes Man.
Yeah.
Zoe Deschanel. Yeah, like her, she's like a typical character as well. Whereas with this one, she's so selfish that she cares about herself. The way she breaks up with him, it's completely impulsive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's happening in the story.
Yeah.
The definition of a manic pixie dream girl is exists solely in the fevered imaginations of sensitive writer-directors to teach broodingly soulful young men to embrace life and its infinite mysteries. They're said to help men without pursuing their own happiness, and such characters never grow up.
Mm.
That's happened here. She hasn't grown up. She's done a full 360 of trying to delete him, has come back around as well. So has he. She is still that idealized, perfect woman. Even though he knows she's not, she still ends up being that because he picks her at the end.
Do you think so? Do you think they just both kind of like develop because they know that it's not going to be perfect and they wanted it to be perfect at the beginning?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think she's still... Because he goes back and sees what it was like. He still holds her up as that. I think she ends the movie as being more idyllic and more sort of held up as a dream girl than she even was throughout the movie at the beginning.
Interesting. I just want to say something, ask you something. Elijah Wood, right? You know when he's like copying Jim Carrey's memories and stuff? What do you think about that?
Oh, he's a scumbag.
So creepy, isn't it? You know, it's saying the stuff. So you got to think that it didn't really work on her either, did it? Because she's obviously reacting really badly to these...
Well, because she knew. Because, like, that was the whole problem. You had to get rid of everything that reminded you of them. So even if you had the procedure, if you saw something that brought back that memory... Because I guess they were sort of saying that memories can be held in things not in your brain. Like, you know, you've got photos all over your living room. You might not have that exact picture of... something in your head right now, but by seeing an object...
came up on the mic.
you know what I mean? But by seeing an object,
it contains
that memory. And so I think that was the problem, is that he was using that because he knew that she liked those things, but because they were the memories of Jim Carrey...
Yeah, he was freaking her out. Yeah.
Made her crazy. That scene in...
I liked it when she said, meet me in Montauk, and that's the reason why they're in Montauk in the first place.
Yeah.
In his memories.
That was a really good scene. But then how did she get in there? When they're lying on the lake.
Yeah, but that was really lovely. That's what I was thinking about. So she says when she's in his memories as a way for them to escape and hide, right? When they're hiding from the doctors, she says, meet me in Montauk. But she's a figment of his memory, right?
Unless she's planted that in there or something.
But then how does she end up in Montauk, you know, at the beginning and then at the end? Do you know what I mean?
Because she went there with Elijah Wood. Because she said, let's go there.
Yeah, let's go to Montauk. But if he...
Just a coincidence.
Do you think so? Because I was a bit like, if that's his memory of her saying that and that's where he ends up going to Montauk, how does she get in there?
Mm.
That's what... Unless
she had said that to him in real life or something.
At one point. And
then he just remembered that. And then that's why it sort of flipped in her brain and she was like, we have to go there right now.
Yeah.
There's a song called Meet Me in Montauk.
Oh, is there?
By a band called Circus Survive.
You know, do you have rules, like, for you and your girlfriend? Like, for example, like, let's say the train door's closed. No, like, let's say, like, you're on the tube and then you get on and the tube door closes. Like, what do you do?
I'd get off at the next stop and wait for her out of the door.
Is that the rule that you have, like, established? Yeah. Otherwise, she's, like, waiting there for you to come back or...
My mum and dad had a funny story about that where they basically did that. He got on the train, but it was like it was 40 minutes to the next stop. It was like a proper long distance train.
No.
And mum was standing there with like four suitcases. She still tells that story, how angry she was at him.
So he got on?
He got on. I think he got on thinking he'd like turn around and get the bags on or something. And then she didn't get on.
He was like, laters. And then she waited at the same platform, or did she get the next train?
I think she got the next train.
Right, okay.
Or, yeah, something like that.
Did they call each other or no?
No, it was before.
This is before the telephone era.
Before the telephones yeah. existed.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Because underground, there's no reception. So you're a bit like, ah, you need to like have these rules established.
We have a little whistle.
Yeah.
Which my mum used to do for me if I was like in the shops or something and I was just wandering around like okay. looking around lost. She'd do a little whistle and I'd be like...
That's really cool.
And I do that with Maya as well.
So you whistle to your girlfriend like
if
a dog.
If she's lost.
If she's lost.
No, like a dog. That's your words, not mine.
That's quite good for kids, actually.
It's really good.
Yeah, because then you're just like, oh, right, mum's still yeah. around, yeah. That's really, really good, actually.
Yeah, I know.
That's like, proper, like, your mum should write like a parenting book.
Yeah.
Just on that basis. Yeah. Why not? It's this day and age. You can just publish anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, so what should we give this film?
I'm going to give it an A. I think this movie is really clever. I think it's really well done.
I think the editing's pretty superior. I'm going to give it a B, though. B plus.
Why? Brutal.
I think it...
What was wrong with it?
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a B plus. Nothing wrong with it, really.
Well, there are things wrong with it.
I think I enjoyed it a lot more the first time around. Yeah. I think on the second viewing...
You can't take that into your grading of the film.
Of course I can't. Like, I think second viewing, I think... I don't know. There are parts of it that I just was like... annoyed by, I suppose. Mm. But saying that, though, editing... I think the whole Kirsten Dunst side of it was kind of like... boring. And it was a bit too predictable. Like, the minute like I saw her like touching his shoulder, I was like... Oh, obviously, there's going to be something here. Like, kind of thing. I thought Elijah Wood's character could have been a lot more darker as well.
Yeah, he didn't have to be like a murderer.
He could have been, but I
think that's
yeah.
what was good, that he was just like a bit creepy. He wasn't creepy,
yeah.
But he wasn't even a bit creepy. He was just a bit like pathetic.
I do like these films. Yeah, I do like these films when they like mess around with memory, though. You know,
yeah.
I think it's such a cool, little bit like you know, like Russian Doll. Like I said to you, I know you still haven't watched it. So obviously, every time she goes back, something slightly different. Mm. And I think that's always quite interesting because you know, memories are not accurate.
Have you seen Source Code?
No.
Where there was a bombing on a train,
right?
And they, through the technology that they have, they're able to send a guy that's alive into the head of someone on the train.
Mm.
And he goes back and then he's got like 10 minutes to try and find out where the bomb is, and then he gets blown up again and they have to send him back through, like they have to keep sending him back in. It's really well done.
What's that film with what's her face now, the Emily Blunt, keeps going back
Edge of Tomorrow.
That's
that
it.
Was good.
Yeah,
that
I
was
quite
really
like
good.
That
surprise again, one of these ones that I was like, ugh, it's gonna be a crappy
she,
sci-fi.
Oh my
it
god
really
her
good.
Body the way she worked out for that film. Because she's quite, like, slim, isn't she? But she properly
bulked up
for that. Mm. That would have taken freaking ages. Actually, I don't know. I don't go to gym, but, yeah. I'm just assuming.
I assume.
But another film with Tom Cruise, you know, with the heads in the water, you know.
Minority Report.
That's it. That's, again.
That was good. That wasn't memories.
See, okay, what do you feel about that? Because.
I love that movie.
I do too. However.
That's a Philip K. Dick novel.
Oh, really? Mm. Okay. So, you know, the guy was about to commit murder and then they get put into a pod forever and ever and ever. Don't you think, though, like, that's a bit much because he didn't do it?
Interesting you bring that up. I hope you're ready for a discussion. There's a man named Sam Harris who has a theory. Mm. His theory is that
free will doesn't
exist.
Yes.
Not in the sense that, like, things are predetermined and fate and stuff, but, like, things... You do things based on your background and your environment.
Yes.
And that... They were using the example of an MMA fighter who ran his car into a woman's car and he got out and ran away. And they obviously caught him and he went to jail for 10 years or something. And they were like, if something had happened earlier that day, earlier that week, earlier that month, he might not have run away. Mm. And then it'd be a different scene.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And so then let's say he had a fight with his girlfriend that morning and it had him in such a bad mood that when that happened, it was like the final straw and he ran away. If he hadn't had that fight, he wouldn't have done it. So the argument is that it's not his decision, it's his environment like causing that thing to happen. But then you get into this argument. It's like, well, how do you know? Mm. You can't ever say... And so then they talk about this with murderers. And they say, well, you know, some of them, if they had a like a mental illness or something happened in their past,
yeah,
it caused them to end up like this.
Is that saying, is it murderers are not born, they're created?
Yeah. But then it's like, but then to where us. Does the blame lie?
Yeah, well,
if it can't lie with them. I think in the terms of that movie, because they argue about that too, if you have three, you know, triplets who can predict the future, then you could be like, he would have done it. You know what I mean? Like, they've seen it happen. So I think it's okay then to arrest
them. But...
because it's not like... it's not where it's like... it's not an indicator.
Yeah, but his intervention...
It is evidence.
But his intervention stops that from happening, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, and this is what I was thinking. So his intervention stops that timeline from happening, so give the man another chance. He gets punished for it, but not forever and ever and
well,
ever.
That's an argument as well.
And then give him another chance, and it's like in life, you got the three-strike rule we have in our law systems, right? And then, you know, if that intention occurs again, and that's, you know, surely that's when he should be punished. But to have that thought and not actually do it because it was affected by the intervention.
But that's it. It was affected by the intervention, not by him. He was going to kill someone.
Yeah, but he was affected, so he didn't actually do it.
Yeah.
I like the ending of that film when they got rid of that crime rate sword. I like that. I thought, you know, at the end when they had the numbers, I was like, oh, that's interesting, isn't it? Because they got rid of it on that kind of ethical basis.
Yeah.
And it was like, ooh.
How can you arrest someone for something they haven't done?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're 100% certain they're going to do it.
Mm, but they haven't done it yet. And it's like, yeah, it's quite interesting.
But you can get
that.
Done for attempted murder.
Huh?
You can get done for attempted murder.
Yeah, but not for thoughts. Not in marriage reports. Because he didn't do anything. He literally, like, thought it, right? Because his, like, the first guy, it was his wife having an affair or something, right? And he finds it, and then that's when it's intervention. Attempted murder is like, you know, you actually try
and do it. But it wasn't because of his thoughts. They had future-seeing people that could see it happen. So it wasn't his intention that he was being arrested for.
But
it was the fact that he was going to do it.
He was going to do it, but when the intervention occurred, he was just
at that point. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Whereas attempted murder is like you actually physically try and do it and you fail. So if I got done for attempted murder with you, I would try and like strangle you or something, but then someone would actually stop or.
But how do you know you wouldn't have stopped?
Sorry.
But how do they know you wouldn't have stopped?
Yeah, exactly. Because it would have been a failed attempt. That's why. So that's what attempted murder is. You have to.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, if you put your hands around my throat and try and choke me, and someone comes in and pulls you off, and they say you were going to kill him if I hadn't stopped it, how do they know? You might have stopped in the next 3 seconds. It's the same thing.
Yeah, but, you know, that's attempted murder, isn't it?
But exactly. Why?
Yeah. Because I had my...
But you weren't attempting... You might not have been attempting to kill me.
What was I attempting to do?
I don't know. You were doing it. But you know what I mean? Like, it's the same...
It was
like,
my fetish. From fetish.com. By the way, strangulation. Another common one after feet, right? We were talking about this earlier.
Yeah, it makes more sense to me.
Strangulation. Yeah. Well,
auto-erotic,
you know, a lot
asphyxiation.
Of... Yes. A lot of accidental deaths are because of... sexual fetishes, yeah, which is quite sad. Mm. And one a person I know, her friend's dad, yeah,
really,
yeah,
jeez.
And like she obviously was embarrassed, so she would never tell anyone. She just said her dad just died in an accident, but then it came out and it was like really embarrassing for her, which is quite horrifying, really, isn't it? When you're like in school,
yeah, that's really horrible.
Yeah.
Anyways, on that note,
yeah.
So. Next week, we've decided to pick psychological thrillers.
Yes. Yes.
What have you picked for us?
I just thought about some of the kids were like acting at the shower scene from Psycho, like in school the other day.
Weird.
I don't know. We were doing a tableaus from like Hitchcock films.
That's funny.
Vertigo. Ah! So, I picked for you 1 hour photo for late Robin Williams, the amazing actor that he was. I thought this was one of his best roles ever. And you've seen this, haven't you?
Yeah.
I think it's
brilliant
film.
And I've picked a few Prisoners.
I've never seen this. Never heard of it.
Hugh Jackman. Mm. It's weird because it's same as me. When I first saw it, I'd never heard of it. Mm. And someone was like, watch it. Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Love them both.
Really, really well done, this movie.
You like Jake Gyllenhaal, don't you?
A lot. I think he's a really good actor.
Very underrated, I think.
Did I tell you I watched that Velvet Buzzsaw movie?
Yeah.
I think he's underrated too. Is he as rated as he needs to be?
Ooh,
Jarhead was really good.
That's interesting.
He was in Source Code. Watch that.
Okay, yeah.
I really liked him in Jarhead. Mm. I thought he was really good in... Have you seen Brothers? Okay, so...
I think so. This is ringing a bell.
Him and Tobey Maguire are brothers, and Tobey Maguire goes to war and gets captured, and they think he's dead.
Yeah.
And so Jake Gyllenhaal looks after the family, and then Tobey Maguire gets
home. Yeah, it's like an epic, isn't it? It's like,
It was really good. It was really good.
It was a bit intense. Like,
it was intense. Yeah. It was intense.
It was a bit intense. It was one of those films that you just had to sit and concentrate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was nice,
like,
though.
But there's two, like, the scene where Tobey Maguire has to, like, kill his best friend in the, like, cave thing. And then he gets back and he loses his mind and, like, screams at his kid and, like, yells at everybody. That was intense.
But I like these kind of films, you know, when you have siblings but you've got, like, built up resentment about, like, really, like, little things, but it's been years and years and years. And
well, as Dean Bernard says, captured and living in, like, he was a hostage.
Yeah, but, like, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal was like, angry because he had to be head of the family and all that stuff. And you're just thinking, all right, mate, like, I like that film, though. I thought the actual characterization of them was really, really good.
Yeah,
I like him.
I think he's a really good actor.
Did you like him in Love, Sex and Other Drugs?
I don't think I watched that.
Oh, that was, you know what? It was Anne Hathaway was the problem in that film. I don't know.
Like Anne Hathaway?
I used to like her. I just think she's quite crap now.
I hate Anne Hathaway.
Why?
Hathaway, just because she's like overrated.
I think she is quite overrated. But you know what he said about that? He said, the most difficult time of his entire acting career was trying to pretend to look turned on when Anne Hathaway was hitting on him.
That's rough.
I know, because he hated her. He hated working with her.
What? Really?
Yeah. I think they'd like... Well, then Harry and Meryl Streep didn't go on, because Meryl Streep's like quite difficult to work with as well, isn't she?
Have you seen Nightcrawler?
Yes.
Have you seen End of Watch?
No.
You should watch End of Watch. So it's him as a cop,
yeah,
but he's making like a... He does, like, night school making documentaries.
Okay.
And so he does, like, he films a day or a week or something at work as a cop and is really, really well done. End of Watch.
End of Watch. Right, we're talking about all these other films. Yeah, One Night Fault and Prisoners. That's what we're doing next week.
Please, please, please watch what we're watching. Focus on where we're focusing on, which is just everything now.
Yeah.
But let us know what you think. First of all, would you have picked any other Manic Pixie Dream Girl movies? Would you have picked any other psychological thrillers to look at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. And if you have any comments or queries or anything like this, please hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah.
I always want to say Snapchat for some reason. Yeah, the Homework Club
pod. We're not on Snapchat
just yet.
We're not.
We're never going to
Snapchat.
Shania
was going to start us a Homework Club Snapchat.
Can you imagine? Forget that nonsense. Anyway, the Homework Club Pod, and email us at the homeworkclubpod@gmail.com.
And we'll see you next week.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye.